The Office of Management and Budget hosted its first federal workforce symposium last month to gather ideas government can use to make good on its modernization priorities. The recommendations are now out from the MITRE Corporation, which summarized the symposium and offered its own analysis. Jim Cook is MITRE's Vice President of Strategic Engagement and Partnerships. He tells Federal News Network's Nicola Grisco about some of those recommendations and some of the barriers government will need to tackle.
I would say that the ideas that seem to generate a lot of interest and a lot of engagement, especially as people talked about some of the challenges, was if you go back to the framework, this notion that anything that you do should consider the employee experience. Several people, we may even have a quote in the report, I don't recall, but several people specifically said, you know, people are the key. The organizations don't work effectively if our people aren't engaged and our people aren't productive and our people aren't fulfilled. And so even when you look at topics like, well, how do you do performance management and compensation? Well, what does that look like? What are the incentives that are meaningful to people? It's different for organization, for individuals. It's difficult to look at the workforce as a homogeneous aggregate or as a single entity. And so this notion of understanding the employee experience, using data to understand how you can most effectively engage with people, how you deploy your resources, how you make your investments and where you make your investments, where you focus your training, that was another related topic. This notion of data science to develop evidence-based HR strategies was in some ways a new recommendation for the government. As you said, a lot of these recommendations have been discussed, but the data science recommendation can become a key enabler. And I think that resonated with a lot of people, this idea that, hey, the federal government does have a lot of data on internal operations. If we did some of the same things that private sector companies, Fortune 100 companies, are beginning to do, to use the data that they have on themselves to figure out what's really happening in an organization and where they should be putting their investments in their people and develop evidence-based HR strategies, that's a new approach for the government, and that's something that's worthwhile exploring. So that got a lot of energy, that got a lot of attention. And I think that another topic that got much discussion was around performance management. And that may be one of the hardest of the recommendations to make, and there are a lot of considerations and potential barriers there. But I think one of the things that was resonating with folks is that as you look at leading organizations outside of the government, they're really focusing on not just pay for performance, but pay for performance and value. And what that means is looking at, again, back to the individual versus the aggregate, instead of ranking and rating people against each other, that you look at what individuals bring to the organization, the skills, the results, and the behaviors that they bring to the organization. And that represents the value to the organization both now and into the future. And compensation in many organizations now is being aligned to address the value component, not just the performance component. And so that's, again, maybe a new idea, or at least a new approach, one that will clearly have a lot that needs to be worked through in order to get there, but one that we felt strongly enough should be proposed to the government, because I think there was strong agreement that the performance management system needed to be rethought.
One of the recommendations mentions finding ways to collaborate with labor relations groups. Were federal unions or other labor organizations there at the symposium? Did they offer any feedback or inform any part of the report?
Yes, there was a labor perspective in the room, both current representatives and past labor leaders from federal labor unions. In fact, one of the discussions that occurred in the morning and then carried through the rest of the day, started in the morning on the panel, is the importance of management labor collaboration. And we had really compelling story shared about the advances made at the Portsmouth Naval Yard and how labor and management worked together to really redefine the way they operated. And they started, incidentally, back to the people aspect of it, they started by recognizing that they had at least two issues that they needed to deal with. One was flat performance, and the other was, you know, lower than hoped for employee engagement. Well, they decided to get together with the employees and really engage the employees on a voluntary basis and ask employees, what would you like to see different? What would an ideal day look like for you? When you come onto the job site in the morning, what would you like to have available to you to help you do your job better? That level of engagement alone and the voice that it provided for the employees was something that both labor and management felt like they needed to follow up on. They had a common interest in the outcome, and even though they had differences, they were now able to work through their differences, and they're telling the story, by the way. They were able to now work through their differences because they knew they had a common goal in mind. And that was a really compelling story, and I would say that people from all different sectors and across the spectrum of organizations in the room, including federal employees, walked away feeling like that was a very compelling story. And so we thought that that needed to be reinforced, and we think that there's opportunities to do that beyond just one particular instance like Portsmouth, but why not be able to do that government-wide?
The report talks about several specific, perhaps, barriers to implementing some of these ideas. And in some cases, they're really specific. I noticed, you know, one of them mentioned a recommendation on enhancing critical hiring authorities, but then also mentioned that there's a cap on critical position pay. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that, where you all found some of those specific barriers and what you hope pointing them out brings forth. I mean, I think generally there's a lot of agreement around some of these ideas, but I think there's also a sense that it's time to maybe get moving, and addressing Right. some of these barriers might help do that.
To your point, Nicole, that's exactly why we felt like we needed to be specific where we could. So in some cases, the barriers were brought up by people in the room, and they were part of an open discussion. In other cases, they were the result of our own knowledge and experience in working with the federal government and understanding what it might take to implement some of these ideas. So the one that you cited is a great example. I personally have had a lot of experience with the critical position pay authority, both across government and the streamlined authority that's been granted to the IRS and NASA in the past. So in many ways, a lot of this was equally informed by our own knowledge and experience. But we did feel that the considerations are important to be specific as opposed to being abstract in general, because if OMB is going to move out and work with others to implement any of these ideas, to your point, we should know what do we need to solve for in order to make it happen. And that was really our objective behind the act, both the actions and the considerations, right? Specific things to do if you wanted to do these, and specific things you needed to solve for in order to make it possible.
That's Jim Cook, Vice President of Strategic Engagement and Partnerships at the MITRE Corporation, speaking with Federal News Network's Nicola Grisco. Check out her story at federalnewsnetwork.com.